AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. I did briefly consider sitting in silence for 15 seconds to protest about the Miami match, but then I decided that instead I would pretend there was no such protest and bestow peace upon the world. Maybe La Liga should get the Nobel Peace Prize. If Getafe's Alan Neom had boycotted the first 15 seconds of his appearance, it would have been 41% of his playing time. He got a 5-second ovation from the home fans as he ran onto the pitch. He palmed Vinny in the face to stop a counter-attack. He was back on the bench in time to see Mbappe score the only goal of the game. It rivals Paulo Gazzaniga's opening day performance for Girona as the worst of the season so far. Girona at bottom of La Liga again after they lost at Barcelona despite repeatedly being ushered through on goal by the home defence, acting as compliant traffic cops. Luckily for Barca, playing the big lad up top card still works sometimes. We head into the Clásico with 2 points between the top two. Thank heavens, ladies and gentlemen, for VAR. Without it, we'd have a lot more goals, and who wants that? Terry Gibson will explain how justice was done in the case of Atletico Madrid versus Osasuna. Antoine Griezmann is a monster, and that's all I'm saying for now. You know, in other leagues, they have a laughable invention called goal line technology, in which the referee is informed instantly if the ball has entered the goal. I prefer the La Liga system, with a professor of geometry, a forensic scientist, and an artist all getting together and spending 3 minutes deciding whether or not it's an actual goal. I'm looking forward to plodding through the latest referee controversies while we keep you waiting to discover their Celta Vigo score. It's a real cliffhanger.
Lots to go through from this weekend's action.
Yes, definitely. Where do we start? Can we do goal line tech first? We'll get that one off the... No, yes, can we do goal line technology, please, Terry? Honestly, everywhere else, it's just a really simple thing, isn't it? Ball goes in the goal, they give the goal.
What was bizarre was Kicker Garcia was running around saying, no, it's a goal. Trying to tell people, no, it's a goal. Don't bother chasing around and playing on for the next few minutes. It was over the line, and when you do see the replay, it's clearly over the line. But they had to halt the play, didn't they? The play didn't stop.
Yeah.
VAR obviously got through to the referee and told him, please stop the game. There's no point.
Stop this madness.
It's a goal.
So this was Oviedo 0 or Espanyol 2, 70th minute. So it's a significant first goal of the game. So it's a significant. A bit of the game, and it goes in. There's a bit of a scramble. The goalkeeper sort of claws it back out, but clearly, it's clearly over the line, isn't it? But I guess they just didn't have. It's just baffling that they don't have goal line tech.
No, exactly, and by and large, it's worked okay, isn't it? But in this instance, it highlighted the fact that you do need the signal immediately to the referee to stop the game. The ball's gone over the line. We've got proof. It must have taken them the process of the 3 minutes must have been, as you said, the guys in the VAR booth looking and deciding, and then actually ringing, giving the referee a phone call and sending him a message. It's a goal. That shot that went over the line, it was 3 minutes ago, is a goal.
Yeah.
And luckily for everybody involved, nothing else happened in that 3 minutes. You know, a player getting injured or Oviedo scoring or Celta scoring again. But they did have to, the game didn't break down. They had to get to the referee and say, look, stop. And he blew the whistle and everyone stopped. And as I say, by that time, Kike Garcia, he knew he was closest. He was a meter out from the goal line. And it was clear. I mean, initially, when you see it, you think, for us, to the naked eye, to the officials, maybe. Yeah, I can't definitively, I wasn't in the right angle. I wasn't level. I didn't have the perfect view. I can't give a goal because I'm not sure. But in the 3 minutes, it didn't need to, it doesn't need to take 3 minutes to confirm that the ball had crossed the line. So, as you said, it was a big goal. It was 17 minutes in. It was the first goal of the game, and it was, as it turned out, a decisive goal.
Oviedo struggling out there. Espanyol, did really well.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they were struggling. They'd gone forward without a win, and there was like people putting the pressure on them. I mean, at that stage they had 12 points and they were flying high in the league, and it was, but suddenly the expectation levels were, oh, Espanyol haven't won for four, but they played Real Madrid, they played some, a couple of other difficult fixtures, and for them to be six now and 15 on 15 points is, they are still one of the teams that you look at the beginning of the season as relegation candidates. I know they've got better players now, they're improving, there's a better atmosphere around the club. But it still is a point of, that they are amongst that group of teams that will be looking at sufficient points. Manolo Gonzalez will admit that, I would imagine, that that's their first and foremost. They're not looking at European football. Yeah, it's possible if they maintain this form. But the first target is getting enough points to and keep well away from the relegation battle. And I think they will. It's not a given, but I think they will.
Right, there we are. Friday
Yep.
done, and we started with Oviedo Espanyol. So there we
Oviedo,
are.
but bearing in mind Oviedo made the change of manager. I'm not sure that was I'm sure it's not the
Talk us
right
through that
call
because
to sack him.
So they sacked Paunovic, who got them
Yeah.
promoted. But when I say got them promoted, he only took over in March.
Yeah.
And so, but he did. He got them promoted, and then what was it? 8 games into the season, they fired
Exactly.
him and brought back the previous guy from a couple before him. So it's yeah.
Who got them in the playoffs but didn't get them promoted. Luis Carrión, and then he had the Las Palmas job, and then he lasted nine games last season before getting the sack. I would have understood it if they'd gone for someone like Luis García Plaza. I don't know if he's still out of work, I don't know if he's got a job elsewhere. Someone that's got the experience of managing in the top flight more than nine games, or there's other managers about that have got experience of keeping teams up in a relegation battle. And that from day one, that's what Oviedo was going to be. I heard stories saying the president thinks that their aims, they should be aiming higher than just avoiding relegation. It's been 24 years since they've been out of the top division, and he's talking about European football.
Avoid
And you look
relegation
at
first.
the players they brought in, lots of players. Paunovic was figuring things out. They didn't spend a lot of money. They brought in loads and on free transfers and loans and stuff like that. It was always going to be a struggle. So I'm flabbergasted they made the change after eight games. And to me now, they don't look good enough, if I'm being honest, as the season is developing. And my prediction is probably he's not going to be the last manager of Oviedo this season. And then you're going to have one of those seasons where you go through three managers, maybe more,
The three
get
manager
relegated.
strategy always works, doesn't it?
Exactly. Guaranteed for survival, that one.
So there we are. So we didn't start with Real Madrid or Barcelona, everybody. So we, but now we will move on to Real Madrid and Barcelona. Don't worry, don't worry. It's it's looking a little bit like a two-horse race, but. Oh, so right. Shall we go to last night? So Getafe nil, Real Madrid one. It wasn't the greatest of games. It was, but it's sort of brought to life, I guess, by the Alan Neom. We've got to talk about him first, haven't we, Terry? So he literally comes, an old La Liga legend and a war horse. How old is he? 36, I'm going to say.
Must be, yep.
Comes onto the pitch, and like I say, he got the fans. Way,
He's
that was
popular,
all.
isn't he? He's athletic. He's still fit and healthy. They've had their issues, Getafe, in terms of signing players and bringing players in. And he was there last season. And it didn't take long to get up to speed in the games that we've seen him appearing so far this season. So I
He didn't
get why
quite
they did it.
didn't get up to speed in this game, did he? So the
Never
so they
chance. Didn't get out of breath.
yeah. So the ball goes. They attack, don't they? In the in this is the 30 seconds in 37 seconds, I think he was on the pitch. And then Real Madrid win the ball back, they clear it, and Vinny's about to break. Now, there's a lot of debate about whether it was a red card. I can see why he sent him off, but also it's not a goal scoring opportunity because he's in his own half, so he's miles away. Good as Vinny is, he's not scoring.
Yeah, that, I think that's out of the equation, isn't it? I think the referees are judging it to be an over aggressive challenge.
So he sticks his arm up. I checked with you. I was thinking, not a red, really, is it? But
no, if you break it down, if you slow it down, the arm is out and it looks like he's clotheslined him.
Yeah.
But it's the natural reaction of a defender that's been, I mean, the ball's 20, 30 metres away. There's a possibility it's going to be travelling towards Vinicius. And Vinicius has made good movement. He's gone short, then he's turned and spun. And the instinct of Neom is to put his arm out to try and block the run. I think Vinny's looking for a contact. And I looked at it really closely lots of times to see, first of all, if there was an elbow, to see if it was an aggressive challenge, to see if he clotheslined him and just nearly took his head off. Vinny could have avoided that challenge completely. Vinny throws himself into Neom. And there's a wristband that's thrown in the air, and I'm trying to break it down between the... And it's Vinny's wristband. Neom hasn't got one on. So Vinny's sort of thrown himself into the contact, and it's not an aggressive challenge. It's a yellow card. I don't think it's worthy of a red, and I think there is an element of now... And we have to look at Vinny. He got the Santi Marino sent off in the last game against Villarreal, where it was a similar challenge... an arm across the chest, and Vinny went down holding his face, and it worked, and he got the player, I think it was a second yellow, and he got him sent off. He provokes Neon. They had to bring on Neon because it was very close to Kiko Firmino being sent off for a second yellow card because of his challenges on Vinicius. There's an element of it's Hetafe, so we can pile in on them because they're an aggressive outfit. But that's their right to do that within the laws of the game. They are underdogs. You know, we can talk about, particularly when they play Real Madrid, they're underdogs in most games they play in. And they can be aggressive. They're allowed to be aggressive to a degree. And I think that Vinny plays upon that. When he plays against Getafe last night, he played upon the fact that he believes they're out to get him. And he's provoking the challenges. The second one from Alex Sanchez.
Can I just come back before we go on to that, Chris? I'm just going to push back a bit on that, but be on the Getafe. Right. The argument. I don't think he's clotheslined him. I think Vinny has gone and he's exaggerated it. But where I've got little sympathy for Getafe is that you've had one guy foul Vinny, let's say repeatedly. You stick another one on. It's like a tag team. He sticks another one on to do the same cynical job on the same guy. And he doesn't just grab his shirt. He does throw his arm up. So he could have hit him in the face. And admittedly, I don't think he has whacked him in the face. I wouldn't have given a red. But I don't have that much sympathy because he's been sent on the pitch to do that, to stop
it. The thing is, we're judging Getafe because they're Getafe. We have to judge... We can't, because of what they've done in the past, we can't blame, it's Bordalás and it's Getafe, what?
But that's
Damian Suarez did it all the time and got away with it. But in this instance, we can't look at the evidence from over the last 10 years.
But you sort of can. If you've got a track record and then you do it again, then that's fair enough to judge you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why it's divided people's opinions, because there's a big divide of opinion because it's Real Madrid and the Real Madrid supporters think it was the right call. Anyone that supports anyone else in the league thinks that Real Madrid got away with it because it's Real Madrid. And then there's an opinion of, well, Getafe deserve it because that's what they're like. They've got away with more than they've been caught. So it's a difficult one. But I'm looking at the two sendings off.
Yeah.
And the Senkrees one, Ipsili. He's already booked.
So Neom 77 minutes. Let's get the timeline. So Neom, 77th minute, gets sent off. Then Real Madrid score, and then Senkrees is sent off pretty soon afterwards, isn't it? So he goes bang, bang, bang. And the second one is just like he's just an idiot, isn't he?
It's an attack. It's not a really bad challenge, but if you're booked, and you're frustrated, obviously, but then to do that, you're asking for trouble. And he got exactly what was coming his way. I don't have any sympathy for that one.
Yeah.
It wasn't the worst challenge in the world. Was it a yellow card offence? In normal, we saw loads of tackles like that this weekend and every other weekend. Some get it, some don't. It was in a blatant yellow card offence, but it was in the heat of the moment with the context of the game. And Vinny again made dramatic. He brought it to the referee's attention, didn't he? That there was a tap on the calf and he threw himself up in the air. And then, of course, that makes it a decision the referee has to make. And it had to be the second yellow. So, and then we had the extraordinary, they're playing with eight outfield players, and Abu Kamara, nearly the Englishman who came off the bench, nearly got an equaliser. So, it wasn't a great game, wasn't a great performance from Real Madrid. And we're looking at the three big clubs now, Real Madrid, Atletico, Barca. They scored four goals between them at the weekend against Girona, Osasuna and Getafe. So we're looking at in the context of the week, international break. I would say awkward games, but I think Getafe Real Madrid is awkward. Atleti at home to Osasuna isn't. Barca Girona isn't.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
But then they've got Champions League coming up. Barcelona got players missing. Real Madrid have got players missing. It's a little bit of a testament to that if you're not at it and you're not playing properly, then teams like Osasuna and Girona and Getafe can make life difficult. So it's good for the league. But in terms of entertainment this weekend, the three big teams really didn't deliver. And Getafe made it difficult for Real Madrid in this game. It wasn't a great performance from Real Madrid. Disjointed. I still have issues with their midfield.
Well, let's discuss that, shall we? Because Alan, one of our patrons, if you want to be a patron, patreon.com/LTEL.
Yep.
And as one of our patrons, Connor, put it, the only good thing about the international break is the Q&A pod that we do in the international break. So thank you, Connor. Thanks. You, Alan, for your question. Basically, he wants to know what Bellingham. He wants you to break down Bellingham's performance. Sometimes he was deep, sometimes he was high. What we're going to do, while we're on, so for those of you who... Oh, just listening to the podcast, you won't be able to see this, but if Patreons, they get a picture. So I might be able to share. Talk us through where Bellingham was playing, and I will illustrate it with a touch map that I'm stealing from ass.com.
Well, it's an old-fashioned position and where a midfield player does both, defends and attacks. We are accustomed now to seeing either a defensive midfielder or an attacking midfielder. Now, the Real Madrid problem is Tchouaméni, I believe, is being asked to play too deep. So it's... I get what Xabi Alonso is trying to do. It's a hybrid holding midfield player, third central defender, allowing the fullbacks to push on into really advanced positions. And so Tchouaméni, therefore, sometimes is between the two centre-backs of split, which then means is if you've got Camavinga and Bellingham ahead of them, and Camavinga plays to the left, you're relying on the fullbacks being midfield players down the flanks. In the case of Fede Valverde in particular, doing a bit of everything down the right flank and just leaving that. And likewise when Danny Carvajal plays there. So Bellingham has an issue then where there's a great big gap between Tchouaméni, who's the midfielder, and Mbappe, who's the centre forward. And there's this big space in the centre of midfield. And someone like Jude Bellingham, who is capable of doing defending and attacking, feels he's obliged to actually try and play in the whole of that space and close that gap up to Kylian Mbappe. And I think it's a weakness this year for Real Madrid. So, I think it makes them slightly better defensively, and Tchouaméni can be comfortable in possession of the ball when he's in between the two centre-backs. But his overall play means that he doesn't venture into authentic midfield positions too often.
So this on screen now, you can see Bellingham. That is touch map. Yeah. Which would be, I mean, a fairly old-fashioned almost. There's his heat map and there's his touch map. So sometimes, I think Alan's point was sometimes he was deep. So he's dropping in to this sort of left-back back area, isn't he? I guess, yes, to get on the ball.
And Bellingham's still left-sided. Camavinga's still left-sided.
Yeah, I'll show you Camavinga. Camavinga's very left-sided. There's Camavinga.
The shape of the midfield, in my opinion, is something that's not right at Real Madrid so far. The standout midfield player, and he's played a bit of both, is Arda Güler, because of his contributions in terms of half of Mbappe's goals he's assisted.
Yeah.
But again, that is not a classic midfield player position. Yeah. He's attacking and he's playing in a right-sided position. Mastantuono was playing in an attacking position last night. They seem to lack the... I mean, Casemiro, Kroos and Modric, that's what they need to get to. I'm not talking about the individual players, but that shape where Casemiro sat deep but didn't drop between the two centre-backs as much as we're seeing Tchouaméni asked to do. Yeah. And then you have Modric and Kroos that were authentic midfield players.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't get 20 goals a year, but they contributed with so much that it was the engine room of the midfield. The engine room of the team for Real Madrid was those three players. And I, at the moment, I see the shape of Real Madrid as strange in midfield.
So essentially, you don't mind Bellingham. I'll show you Bellingham again. So that's Tchouaméni. Yep. He's never got beyond, what's that? That's 25 yards, 25 metres from the goal. Yeah. So he never gets into the attacking third almost.
And look how many deep ones there are as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of touches around midfield, but that will be points at which Getafe are pressed back, obviously, and he's coming up here.
And that's against a team that have very little attacking play.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Getafe, you know, down to 8 outfield players for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And prior to that, I was looking at them and seeing that the way that Getafe were playing and thinking, well, they didn't deserve anything. I don't think they deserved anything out of the game. I thought they were just playing for a draw. Mayoral was on the bench, Wamy was on the bench, and there was a lack of attacking players. At times, they didn't have anywhere to go when they had possession of the ball. So the fact that Tchouaméni was playing so deep against a team that weren't attacking, and they weren't attacking in numbers, and they didn't have any sustained periods of attacking play, it meant that there was a lot of work for the other two midfield players, a lot of space for them to cover. And Bellingham, as I say, was Camavinga to the left. Bellingham was thinking, well, I've got to... And you do need that. I mean, and with Real Madrid at the moment, there's a hell of a dependency on Mbappe. I was surprised he played in this game. Thankfully for Real Madrid, he did and scored again. Mm. But if Mbappe's not scoring, if Mbappe gets injured, then Bellingham is the next to go to, I think. I mean, you've got Gonzalo Gonzalez and Endrick, who Endrick's not playing at all, which is strange. I do feel for him. He had the injuries, come back. He's not getting any minutes at all. Hopefully for Real Madrid's perspective, Mbappe stays fit and plays in pretty much every game this season. And he's phenomenal, astonishing, awesome footballer. And he was a match winner again last night. But it is an issue between midfield and the attacking players. There is a space and an area that needs work on, I think.
Yes. So there we are. So ask.com, if you want to look at those heat maps and touch maps, they're really good. They're on ask.com. And then you have to find the results, then find the individual game, then click on stats. They're quite well hidden, but they're quite interesting, aren't they? And those of you, and there are some of you who coach kids football, sometimes it's good having a look. So this is what a right back does. This is where a right back
exactly.
Does. So, yeah,
the heat map and stuff like that are interesting. Yeah. Are they getting forward? That you can. It does tell you a lot.
Yeah.
And I watching that game last night, I agree with Alan. Mbappe was defending. He was in the box. He was in midfield. But that's what midfield players. Bellingham used to. It's what midfield players have done. And sometimes there was two in midfield, and you know, they would have the understanding that if one broke forward, the other one would sit back. It didn't always have to be the same one. And likewise, if you had three in midfield, I mean, Casemiro went forward. He scored goals, Casemiro, from midfield. And if he pushed forward, Modric or Kroos sat deep. So it's we've nailed it down now to specifically holding midfield where you don't have to go forward, or an attacking midfield player, and you say to him, you don't have to run back. You do it, you know, get involved in the high press. You do it, that's your job. And then when it goes past you, you know, trot back, jog back. But we've got players there that can, and this is against a lot of teams that play one up front. So you've got two centre-backs and a holding midfield player playing against one centre-forward. So I for a while now, I thought that's a waste of a position. And Makélélé did it all those years ago. Busquets has then progressed it onto another version of it. Rodri doing likewise. There are other players around that's a central holding midfield player. But it does leave you short in the department of then dynamic, box-to-box, creative, authentic midfield players.
Well,
And I
let's
think that's
move.
Real Madrid, an issue for Real Madrid. I think I've seen it since day one, and I think it is an issue that's against the best. That, with big teams, European teams, Barcelona, Atletico have already shown it. If you can dominate midfield against Real Madrid, it's possible to win a game.
Got Juventus on Wednesday. That will be interesting in the Champions League. Barcelona kept pace with them just about, and it didn't look like it for 70 minutes or something of this game. So they took a lead. Pedri with a lovely goal, made it look easy, didn't he? But then he should score more goals. It seems a strange criticism of him when he's just scored a lovely goal. But he sort of waltzed in and then a little reverse pass like he does in midfield, but into the goal. It's all right, okay,
Exactly.
simple as
It's
that, was it?
exactly what it was. The goalkeeper's reaction is Gazzaniga's, oh, that it's gone. He's going to his right, following the run of Pedri, and it's just a little pass into the bottom corner. A decent amount of power. A strange lineup for Barcelona. Players missing through injury. We believed that Ferran Torres was going to be fit and available, but he wasn't. Dani Olmo is injured again, which is a problem. The amount of times he picks up an injury. No Lewandowski, of course. No Rafinha. Two goalkeepers injured as well, Ter Stegen and Joan Garcia. It was a makeshift team. I'm surprised that Tony Fernandes, the 17-year-old, who I've seen so much of, but I've never seen him play centre forward. He's a number 10 or a right winger, left footed right winger. So it was tough to ask him to play there. I thought that maybe Flick got that wrong. He probably could have played Rashford as the centre forward because he's played there before. More experienced player. I know he's finding his feet in La Liga, but in the circumstances, I thought that would have been a wiser one. And then maybe, put Tony Fernandes out in the wider position. And but Barcelona, it was tough going for them. The reason Pedri looked more like scoring in this game was he was playing it ahead of his normal position. So he was the number 10, which meant he was in the position to be involved in scoring that goal. Casado and Frankie de Jong were holding players. And it was a struggle. I mean, there's no cohesion with their closing down at the moment. They can make the argument, well, we've got so many players missing and players playing in different positions, and it's not our strongest lineup. But Hansi Flick alluded to it that it's not just about the defenders stepping up; it's the fact that the front players and the midfield players are not working together to win the ball back quickly. They're doing it in threes and fours, and it's easy for Girona. It was easy in this game for Girona to get out, and then the back four step up, and then it all became a problem. I mean, but Girona had four goal scoring opportunities from beating the offside trap in the first half. Porto hits the post. Vanat has a good attempt. Szczesny makes a good save. Brian Hill whacks it over the bar. Witsel puts one wide. And they're all a result of not closing down quick enough in midfield and up front, and then the back four stepping up and breaking through. So I don't see this going away in the short term because some of these players are missing for. They're not going to be for the Clásico. They're not going to be playing against Olympiacos. So in the short term, it's a problem for Hansi Flick. And what does he do? And fair play to him, he puts Araujo on up front and doesn't score the goal you expect him to score. It's a
It's
really
not a
good
big lad up,
goal.
it's not a big lad up front goal, is it?
No.
Because Witsel had equalised, I think, with a really good goal.
Great goal.
Not long, a sort of acrobatic, sort of roundhouse kind of finish. And then for 70 minutes, it was all square, wasn't it? And then it's 93rd minute, isn't it, when Araujo scores, gets
I
across his
didn't see a goal
defender.
coming. Barcelona were they were trying to sling the ball in the box to Araujo, but they weren't even doing that very well. They just get complacent. Kind of feel when Pedri scores in the 13th minute and they're playing against a team that are struggling this season. And up until that point, Barcelona started the game lively. And then after 13 minutes, they scored a goal. They take their foot off the gas. They start to get sloppy. Koundé was losing challenges. He was giving the ball away. I think his form is a real issue. I think there's no competition for his position. And I think at times he's guilty of being complacent. And when you've got the rest of the team that's, you know, Eric Garcia and Pau Cubarsí as centre backs, Balde down the left, I don't think he's working with Rashford down the left flank. I think there's issues there that need to be ironed out. I think that Rashford stays too wide. I was trying to explain in commentary, when it's on the right, Lamine Yamal, I'm being critical of Rashford for staying wide. At the same time, Yamal stays wide. But Koundé runs inside. So there's their relationship. But on the left, Balde pushes forward and Rashford still stays wide. And at times you're thinking, there's two players out. They're actually passing to each other 5 yards away. And it needs one of them to go and play inside, particularly when they don't have Lewandowski, particularly when they don't have Ferran Torres, and they're playing Tony Fernandes as a false nine. It needed Rashford to allow that, leave that space for Balde, and Rashford to go and play in an inside forward position at the very least.
Which would suit him anyway, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
As a right footer.
Exactly, but they were changing the direction of play and it was going out wide and there was Balde was looking to run forward and Rashford was clogging up that space. And so that, as I say, on the right side, Yamal stays wide right and everyone knows he's there and it's an easy ball to get you out, just ping it out wide. Yamal will be there. Now, could you imagine if Koundé was overlapping him as well?
Yeah.
Then it would it clogs it up. But Koundé makes those intelligent runs inside, in like inside forward position. So that's their relationship. They need to work on that on the left, Barcelona, and in terms of, you know, working out a similar plan. But there's so many plans for Flick that he's got to work out at the moment. It is difficult for him.
Philip says they're missing Lewandowski more than he wanted to.
Yeah, I saw that from Philip. I think that the it is an issue going forward. They can't rectify it this season, but it's an issue going forward, I think, in terms of they need a world-class centre-forward who's younger than Lewandowski. I mean, Ferran Torres has done really well as backup. Arguments now that Ferran Torres possibly could be the first-choice centre-forward. But in the long term, going forward, is Ferran Torres the answer to Barcelona winning trebles and Champions Leagues as their best number nine, best centre-forward? Doubtful.
Is he going to score you 30, 40 goals?
No. No. And he's good, and he'll get 20, 20 plus, if he has a good season. But it's a position that Barcelona need fulfilling over the next season.
Yeah,
I would say. I was going to say 18 months, a couple of years, but no, I think they need one of those world-class strikers that scores a goal a game next season. Who can that be? I mean, who is there? I mean, there are a few knocking about, but they're not going to buy Harry Kane. Julian Alvarez has been mentioned. That's a contentious call, though, in terms of do Atleti sell to Barcelona? Is there a buyout clause that Barcelona can find the money for? Erling Haaland is another obvious one. They're not going to get Mbappe. They're going to have to work hard then to look at alternatives because there's not many of those that guarantee you goals in the way that I mean, Liverpool are finding that this season, you know, signing Isak and scoring every game and it's not happening for him. There are other strikers around that do well at a certain club but struggle somewhere else. So it's going to take a lot of money for Barcelona to buy that guaranteed striker that's a 10-year younger version than Lewandowski.
Classico next Sunday, UK Ireland kickoff time, 3:15, co-commentary from Terry Gibson.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon, thankfully, not Saturday at 3:15. That was
yes.
Everybody's fear.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that one. At the moment, I would make Real Madrid favourites. I think when I was critical of Real Madrid and their performances in midfield, they've been impeccable apart from their game against Atletico Madrid. And things are ticking along nicely. And I think Housen is going to be injured, for Real Madrid. So that's a loss. But they've got Alaba. Rüdiger's on his way back as well. I think the right back position is a problem if Carvajal or Alexander Arnold are not fit because Valverde will have to play there. I think they're just in a slightly better place and they've got home advantage against Barcelona in the first Clásico.
Barcelona scored 17 goals against them last season.
I know.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, right. We'll talk about
it. Definitely got closer, though, didn't it? Towards the end of the Clásicos. there was a different version of it. It was closer. Barcelona did have the upper hand when they won the Copa del Rey and they finally clinched the La Liga title, but it was closer than the ones we saw earlier in the season where it was, oh, didn't see that one coming.
Atletico Madrid beat Osasuna by a goal to nil. Thiago Almada with a goal. I mean, it sounds when you look at it like that, you think, well, that could have been a dour game, but there's plenty of highlights and whatever. Should we do the VAR thing? Get that out of the way earlier. So it's an early goal, and it would have been a lovely goal as well. It was beautifully constructed, and then they disallow it. And the bloke on COCOMs had no idea why they disallowed it.
And nor did the Osasuna, nor did anyone on the pitch. Osasuna, it was a goal that was disallowed that Osasuna did appeal for.
Yeah, if you had the appeal system, would they have put an appeal in? I don't know if they would. Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe
Rosier is the player who just gets slightly impeded, then Atleti score, and there's no appeal. Which leads you to believe Rossier thinks that Griezmann might have been in my way, but it was 6 yards away.
He wasn't getting to the ball, was he? He wasn't going to put a block in, was he?
No.
So what he's done is eventually the VAR, the eagle-eyed, spotted an opportunity to disallow a goal.
It was a great goal because it was a lovely pass from Julian Alvarez, lovely run off the ball from Baena. You're checking the run of Baena, he's not offside. Because it comes as a surprise when suddenly the referee is putting his finger to his ear.
Yeah.
And you think, and you see the replay of the goal, and you think, well, he's not offside. Then on the second or third one, you think, are they looking at the Griezmann?
You're thinking, oh, not that, surely. Yeah.
Who's 6 metres away and realises he's offside, slams the brakes on, but it slightly impedes Valentin Rossier of Osasuna in getting there. But the Osasuna player doesn't. He doesn't try to shove Griezmann out of the way. He tries to go round him, realises he's not going to get there anyway, and shrugs his shoulders when the goal goes in and thinks, oh, we're 1-0 down. And then the referee gets involved and the little snitches up in VAR. They find a reason to disallow a goal. Look what we've found. And the referee looks surprised. The referee's looking around to his assistant referee and saying, did you see anything there? And both sets of players are over to the referee going, well, what's going on? And as we've said, the VAR have found something.
It's like a legal case.
They could disallow a goal.
It's like the case for the defence finding. Oh, look at this! We found this little, irregularity in the police, what the police have done.
Exactly.
We'll get him off. Anyway.
And then you're right. It was Osasuna. They haven't got a point away from home. I didn't expect Atletico to thrash them, although part of me was thinking, well, they've scored 5 against Real Madrid, 5 against Eintracht Frankfurt. They got to come back to win and scored 3 goals against Rio. So 13 goals in their last 3 games. Whilst I'm not going into it thinking this is going to be a good hiding for Osasuna, I thought there was a possibility of a 2-3-0 win. Osasuna have had some tricky games, but they haven't picked up a point yet. They've only scored 1 goal away from home. And to go behind as early as that goal from Baena would have been beneficial for Atletico. But as it was, they had to really struggle to overcome Osasuna. And Osasuna, the better times are ahead away from home, difficult run of fixtures. And Atleti were forced to dig deep and make loads of changes. And one of those changes, Thiago Almada, I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. He looks a really, really exciting player. And Atleti were forced to... He comes off the bench, scores the goal. Giuliano Simeone had an impact on the game as well. He was on the bench. He come on as well to have a really big impact on the game. And then Simeone 1-0 against Osasuna. All that, what I've just said, scored 1 goal away from home. That was a penalty. Haven't got a point. Then he starts making the changes and dragging people back, and they're defending for their lives, Atletico Madrid. And Sunday Osasuna probably thought, well, we thought this might happen. They're only 1-0 up. They're now going to defend. They're going to let us have the ball. We're going to play in the attacking half for the first time in the match. And Oblak was forced into a worldy save to stop Budimir from equalising in 90-plus minutes. And Budimir should have scored. Anything higher than he slid it in low, which meant Oblak was able to make the save. Anything off the ground would have been a goal, and we'd have been looking at Atletico Madrid and going, why did Simeone? They were a better team. Despite not getting the advantage they deserved, they were a better team. They weren't under threat. And also, because they've gone 1-0 up, 20 minutes to go, the changes are made, And then they just invited us Osasuna back into the game. And it was by the skin of their teeth, they got away with that. And it was critical they won because next week there's going to be either both or one team are going to drop points in the Clásico. So this was so important. Strength from the bench. They played well, Atleti. They just found Osasuna difficult to break down. But they've eventually got the job done. So it's, yeah, it's slowly but surely, all of a sudden you're looking at Atleti, we've gone from 12th and they've crept up, now they're fourth. 8 points off of Real Madrid. It's going to be difficult. Because when I look at Atleti now, I look at, is it possible for a team that drops points in the games they already have to drop points away to Celta, Alaves, the loss to Espanyol, drew at home to Elche? Real Madrid and Barcelona are not going to drop those points. You'd be hard pushed to see Real Madrid and Barcelona dropping that many points in those games against similar opposition. So it's they're coming back. They're on the way up, but I still think it's going to be tough for them to haul back the deficit to 6 and 8 between Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Villarreal, the other team that is in pursuit, they did drop points, and after being 2-0 up as well, a couple of good goals as well. I mean, a brilliant move for the second Villarreal goal. It was beautifully constructed. Molero finished it off, and at that point, sort of midway through the second half, you're thinking they're looking good. But then Antony, remember him? Remember him from last season, Terry? Yes, he came back and got the two goals for Betis to draw the game.
I was slightly cynical because he played so well last year, made such a difference, become so popular, clearly he wanted to join Betis and he joined. And then for his first two or three games this season, I was thinking, I hope he's not going to be one of those that's got the move, got the deal. And because he didn't fall back into place at the level he was last season. So I was me being cynical,
Was he
thinking,
punching above his weight, though, in that spell with
well,
Betis?
I'm now believing no,
Right, okay. Yeah.
because he's now becoming important again. And it's not just this game at the weekend, it's been the last two or three games where he looks like he was last season. So it just took him a little while to get going.
Yeah.
And I mean, Villarreal had a 2-0 lead for 2 minutes. And if they can hold on to it for 5, 10 minutes, then Betis don't get back in the game. But Molero scores on the 64th. Antony gets a good goal on the 66th. But element of surprise about that goal. When it goes to him, you're thinking it's not a first-time finish.
It's a brilliant
Touch,
goal, isn't it?
controlled it and finished. But it's like catches everybody by surprise. Lovely finish. Then he backs out with another one as well. And yeah, he's going to be an asset to Betis, I think, again. Whereas I was a bit, as I say, I was being cynical, thinking, oh, he's got his deal. He's got his move. He's not looking as sharp as he did last season, but he's getting back to his best now. So that's a massive. You can see by the manager's reaction at the end of the game when they shake hands. One manager's Pellegrini's come back from behind and he's absolutely delighted from 2-0 down to get a point. And Marcelino, likewise, you can see he's down in the dumps because he thought his team had it won. It was third against fourth. It's now third against fifth. It was always going to be a good game. And I knew it was guaranteed goals.
I should mention, by the way, explain what I was on about at the beginning. The whole Miami match, the 15 seconds at the top of the games, the players weren't playing, were they, in protest at the selling out basically of a game to go and play elsewhere. So it's been played abroad, the Villarreal Barcelona game. And La Liga is also doing a peace kind of campaign thing, which is great, but don't put that one on top of that one. It's a simple one. If you want to do a peace campaign, great, but don't use it to cover the fact that you're embarrassed that the players are protesting with about the Miami match. So there we are. That's what I was. That's what I was.
A little awkward for the Barcelona and Villarreal players, wasn't it?
They
were going off on a mid-winter break to play in Miami.
Yes.
It was, yeah, it was a little bit awkward for them.
And they're not even getting any extra money, are they? But
No.
then they get enough, so
Yeah, I was
there's
going to say
something.
that. Yeah, I'm not thinking they should get paid overtime.
Right, let's do the rest of La Liga. So we had a good long discussion about Sevilla in the Q&A pod for the Patreons, in which I did sort of point out that some of the underlying stats are not so good for Sevilla, and then they were looking good against Mallorca, and then got absolutely whacked in a brief period towards the end of the
10
game.
minute spell. Three goals in 10 minutes, 1-0 up. Ruben Vargas, he's a really good player. And the atmosphere in the stadium is fine. It goes into the second half. Everything in the garden is rosy. Then out of the blue, Merici gets a goal. And then Matteo Joseph comes on. And I was searching, thought, I know that name. And he's on loan from Leeds. And hasn't had an impact this season, but certainly did in this one. And yeah, a surprising win, much needed win. Takes the pressure off of Mallorca, puts them on 8 points now, 16th. Their first away win of the season. I think they've won one home game up until now. That bottom of the table looks strange because of the teams that were down there, and they were one of them. And Real Sociedad, Celta, Girona, most of them are still down there, but
It's so close, isn't it? But
yeah.
14th to 20th are 8 points to 6 points.
8 points is the total of most teams, and then five and six, and you're looking at it and thinking, oh God, there's that's you know, a win or a draw in the case of Mallorca, and you fly up the table. So that was a surprise. It was a surprise outcome because of the way the game was going for over an hour. No sign of Mallorca winning this game. And then also out the blue, three goals in 10 minutes, and yeah, really impressive score. And they will push on now. It'll give them confidence.
I mean, they had a stinking start, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got
In
I've
terms
had
of
some
fixtures.
sympathy for him. Right, Levante nil, Rayo Vallecano three, and the whole not celebrating thing came into play for Jorge de Frutos. I wonder actually whether everyone shouldn't celebrate. It's because his finish, the second
There's
finish was
always a
up.
reason.
His second finish was ice cool because he's obviously thinking, oh, don't get too carried away. Don't get, it was probably perfect for him. He keeps a cool head, scores the goal, so he was the hero. I mean, Rayo sort of needed that, didn't they? It's been a bit, it's an underwhelming start.
Yeah, but they won the last game away at Real Sociedad, and they've been playing well. They've been different to the teams that were struggling. Rayo, they've been playing okay. We saw a performance against Barcelona; they should have won. So they've been close with some of the other teams below them. We're looking at a bad start. I mean, we're going into this game at the weekend, and teams like Real Sociedad and Rayo Vallecano had 5 points from 24. It's that really, really bad start to the season. Rayo was slightly better, and it wasn't a surprise to me they won this game. But the continuing surprise for me with Rayo is Jorge de Frutos. I mean, he's been called up to the Spain squad. He keeps scoring goals. It's a new position. He was a wide player. He never played up front for Levante. He played as a winger. That's where when he joins Real, where he played. And then all of a sudden, last season, towards the end of the season, he was asked to play up front. And he's being prolific this season. So I always thought Rayo, I mean, they're only 10th, but they're pushing up now in terms of points. I thought they would win this game, and Levante looked like they're going to be in for a struggle as well. And already the transfer speculation, Levante on 8 points, one of those teams I was talking about on 7, 8, 6 points, that Etteri Young might be sold in the January transfer window. They'll make a profit, but it's a player they could do it for a whole season if they have a chance of staying in the division.
Celta Vigo, the only team that hasn't won. They have drawn seven of their nine games, and this was the cliffhanger. It was another 1-1. And a funny, I mean, the 89th minute, the equaliser from Real Sociedad after Celta. They scored a lovely goal 20 minutes in. A player sent off just before
Pablo
half time.
Duran scored. Karl Steinfeld gets sent off for a second yellow. Stupid decision. Not from the referee, from
Right,
him.
I couldn't quite figure it out when I was watching it first. I was thinking, what's happened? Because it was a set piece, wasn't it? And so there's
Yeah, it
loads
was
going
one of those
on.
referee blows the whistle. The corner isn't taken. There's pushing and shoving, and he just pushes someone in the back. And it was aggressive. It was stupid. He gets sent off. The game changes. At that point, Celta are in control. It's 7-1-1 draws in La Liga. All seven. So they've had 7-1-1 draws and lost two games. They've only scored one goal a game. They haven't scored more than one goal a game in any competition. So even in the European games, they haven't scored more than one goal. So it's becoming a real issue now. And I mean, this is a team that's playing European football. And we're looking and thinking, hang on, how are they going to deal this season with European football and La Liga? But they're a good team, got a decent sized squad. And all of a sudden you're looking at them thinking, this can't be like Elche and Levante in the past and Valladolid last season. Or can it? I don't know. Celta have had a sort of, for the majority of the time since they've been back in La Liga, it's been a struggle. Constantly changing managers, sacking managers. Rafa Benitez come in to try and shore that up. That didn't work. It was a relegation battle again. And Claudio Giraldes comes in and it all changed. But in that is that short time period of things being on the up the period that we should be looking at? Or is it...
Is that the outlier when they were when they were good last season? Because after January, they surprised us with how well they played.
Yeah.
And that run carried them all the way into Europe. And then, because if like a year ago, I'd said a year from now, Celta would be struggling around the relegation zone, you wouldn't have been too surprised, would you?
No, exactly. Exactly the point. So 7 points, I mean, so 7 draws, they're hard to beat. That gives them a chance. But it's an issue now, I think, for sure, that they're, as I say, they're not scoring enough goals. Now it's become a narrative that that they'll feed off of, that they can they hold on to a one goal lead if they get one goal ahead. I mean, it was Carlos Soler in the 89th minute with a header. Raul Sosteb, we have to briefly mention them. They're not much better either, are they? Mm-hmm. Six points, they're 18th position. 6 points from 27 for Raul Sosteb. How long do we go before we say, actually, yeah, they're in a relegation battle? Celta, Real Sociedad, Mallorca, some of those other teams. It's not just Levante and Oviedo. Elche don't look like they're going to be a relegation battle. Espanyol don't. There's someone has to be.
Yes, at the moment, lots of teams are. So Elche nil, Athletic Club nil. I haven't watched it, Terry. It was my protest against the Miami game or something.
Didn't miss much. Not in this one. Athletic are fortunate, I have to be honest. Elche were a better team. Ridiculous stat on possession, 69 to 31 in favour of Elche. 15 shots, 5 on target from Elche. Athletic Club, 4 attempts at goal, 1 on target. It was hard going for Athletic Club. Ultimately, they'd be pleased with taking a point in the end, but a team that are finding it difficult at the moment. You know, I think they've won 1 in 7 now in La Liga.
Yeah.
Which after a really good bright start where we thought, this is going to be their top four. Can they bridge that gap to close it up on the three that are normally in the first, second and third? It's looking a far cry away from that at the moment.
Which Champions League games are you going to watch? Are you going to watch Athletic against Carabag? Is that going to be top of you? Yeah.
I know. The Villarreal Man City one. It is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. Atleti going to Arsenal is another interesting one. Real Madrid Juve is going to be a big game as well, of course. And as you said, Athletic playing Carabag. And Barca Olympiacos. So it's a few. I'm actually looking forward to the Villarreal Man City one.
Right, there we are. So, what we will do, we'll discuss all that with the Patreons later in the week. So, Patreons, if you've got any comments on those European games, feel free to contact us. And everybody else, we'll see you after the Clásico.
We have disrespected two clubs, John.
Sorry, say again. Oh, what have we done? Who have I missed?
Disrespected two clubs.
Who have I missed?
Monday night game. Alaves against Valencia.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. Yes.
That's
yes,
our usual. Yeah. We've been recording on Monday with no disrespect to the Monday game.
Yeah, but with some disrespect, isn't it, to the Monday?
Exactly,
we could have rearranged the whole thing, but we didn't for Alaves versus Valencia. Yeah, some disrespect. Yeah. Right. So thank you, everybody, and we will see you next week post-Clásico, and enjoy your football this week. Bye-bye.